than stand here up here for 45 minutes or an hour or two or three thanking you, I'm just going to preach to him. But I'm going to preach to him tonight. So make sure you tell everybody who missed tonight, they missed the best message of the day. You preach it, Kathy. See, it just comes natural. No. By the time you get done, by the time we get done tonight, I don't think he'll kill me. But if he does, I won't be back. Luke chapter 12 and verse 42, it says, "And the Lord said, who then is that faithful and wise steward whom his Lord shall make ruler over his household to give them their portion of meat in due season? Blessed is that servant whom his Lord, when he cometh, shall find so doing. Of a truth I say unto you, that he will make him ruler over all that he hath. But and if that Lord say in his heart, my Lord delayeth his coming, and shall begin to beat the men servants and maidens, and to eat and drink and to be drunken, the Lord of that servant will come in a day when he looketh not for him, at an hour, that's hard to say all at once if you don't slow down, and at an hour when he is not aware, and will cut him in sunder, and will appoint him his portion with the unbelievers. And that servant, which knew his Lord's will and prepared not himself, neither did according to his will, shall be beaten with many stripes. But he that knew not and did commit things worthy of stripes shall be beaten with few stripes. For unto whomsoever much is given, of him shall be much required. And to whom men have committed much, of him they will ask the more." Let's pray. Father, thank you for your love and mercy. Thank you for the blessings that you've given to us. Thank you for the blessings of the wonderful home that we call America. And in spite of the fact that we have our problems, Father, you've given us a great land. You've given us a great place to be born and live and grow up. And many people come to this country. And if we have to put up walls, it's just to keep people from coming in too fast. It's not because people are trying to get out. We thank you for that. And Lord, I pray now that you will bless this message. Help this message to be an encouragement and yes, even a rebuke to us when we don't fulfill our obligations as Christians. And help us to realize that there are those that need our prayers and need us backing them up all the way. And Lord, I pray that you bless this message. In Jesus' name, amen. Now turn back to Exodus. When we get done, we'll be going all the way from generation to revolution. Exodus chapter 3. That's way back near the beginning. Not quite, but almost. We actually won't be doing. We actually won't be going too far, but we'll be going through the books of Exodus and Numbers today, tonight. And in Exodus chapter 3, in verse 10, God has got Moses' attention, and Moses is being drafted. Now I don't know about you, but the thought of being told, this is the job you're going to do for however long. We're Americans. We like to do what we want to do. But you know, sometimes the Lord calls us. And by the way, the Lord's draft is a great one. The reason it's a great draft is because if He's asked you, if He has tapped you and said, I want you to do something, you are in the best seat in the house. Because you can do God's will and be in the center of God's will all of your life. By the way, that's really all of us. But here in Exodus chapter 3 and verse 10, it says, "Come now therefore," God speaking, "and I will send thee unto Pharaoh, that thou mayest bring forth my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt." Wow. "And Moses said unto God, who am I, that I should go unto Pharaoh and that I should bring forth the children of Israel out of Egypt?" By the way, God likes to pick the weak and the feeble. He likes to pick those that don't think so highly of themselves. And Moses here, I don't think, thought too highly of himself. And he, that's God, said, "Certainly I will be with thee, And this shall be a token unto thee that I have sent thee, when thou hast brought forth the people out of Egypt, ye shall serve God upon this mountain. But you know, Moses argued with God. He says, I just can't do this job. And in chapter 4, verse 1, we see this. And Moses answered and said, but behold, they will not believe me, nor hearken unto my voice. They will say, the Lord hath not appeared unto thee. And the Lord said unto him, what is that in thine hand? And he said, a rod. And he said, cast it on the ground. And he cast it on the ground, and it became a serpent. And Moses fled from before it. You think? Pastor, you with me on that? Get a big rake, right? And the Lord said unto Moses, put forth thine hand and take it by the tail. That's not smart. I've never heard a song about grabbing a snake by the tail, but way back when I was a kid, there was a country and western song that said, I've got a tiger by the tail. And I think even in a cartoon once, I saw somebody had a tiger by the tail and said, what do you got? Somebody said, why you got him by the tail? He says, the other end bites. God said, the Lord said unto Moses, put forth thine hand and take it by the tail. You know, God's directions are weird. God, when He directs us to do something, it's not normal. But if God's directing you to do something, follow His direction. And He put forth His hand, caught it, and became a rod in His hand, that they may believe that the Lord God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob hath appeared unto thee. And the Lord said furthermore unto him, put now thine hand into thy bosom. And he put his hand into his bosom, and when he took it out, behold, his hand was leprous as snow. And he said, put thine hand into thy bosom again. And he put his hand into his bosom again and plucked it out of his bosom. And behold, it was turned again as his other flesh. He's got two miracles now. And it shall come to pass, if they will not believe thee, neither hearken to the voice of the first sign, that they will believe the voice of the latter sign. And it shall come to pass, if they will not believe also these two signs, neither hearken unto thy voice, that thou shalt take of the water of the river and pour it upon the dry land, and the water which thou takest out of the river shall become blood upon the dry land. And I don't think it just looked like blood. It was blood. And in verse 10, Moses says, and Moses said unto the Lord, O my Lord, I am not eloquent. Well, man, you're sure doing some pretty fast talking here. Neither heretofore nor since thou hast spoken unto thy servant, but I am slow of speech and of a slow tongue. By the way, when you examine the life of Moses, he let Aaron do some of the talking early on, but towards the end, Moses didn't wait for Aaron to translate. Moses gave Pharaoh the words straight up. And later on, when he would do business with the people of Israel, He would do business one-on-one. He was straightforward with them. He didn't use Aaron to talk for him. He says, I am of slow speech and of a slow tongue. And the Lord said unto him, who hath made man's mouth? Or who maketh the dumb or deaf or the seeing or the blind? Have not I the Lord? Now therefore go, and I will be with thy mouth and teach thee what thou shalt say. And he's still fighting him. In verse 13 it says, and he said, O my Lord, send, I pray thee, by the hand of him whom thou wilt send. Anybody else but me. And the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses. You know, sometimes we're a little resistant to God's will, but don't try His patience. Because look what God does to Moses. He says, the Lord's anger was kindled against Moses. And he said, is not Aaron the Levite thy brother? I know that he can speak well. Listen, folks, we know what happens when Aaron talks. Okay, we'll see that in a minute. Yes, we're going to get that far in the Scriptures. I know that he can speak well, and also, behold, he cometh forth to meet thee, and when he seeth thee, he will be glad in his heart. And thou shalt speak unto him and put words in his mouth, and I will be with thy mouth and with his mouth, and will teach you what ye shall do. And he shall be thy spokesman unto the people, and he shall be to thee instead of a mouth, and thou shalt be to him instead of God. So he's figured out he's not gonna get out of it. And so he goes to the people. Verse 29 of chapter 4. And Moses and Aaron went and gathered together all the elders of the children of Israel. And Aaron spake all the words which the Lord had spoken unto Moses, and did the signs in the sight of the people. And the people believed, and when they heard that the Lord had visited the children of Israel, that he had looked upon their affliction, then they bowed their heads and worshipped. We're getting out of here. But there's going to be a little trouble. Moses and Aaron go in and they tell Pharaoh, "You're supposed to let us go into the. You're supposed to let us go 3 days' journey into the wilderness." And Pharaoh says, "I'm not letting you go." They said, "Well, the Lord is sending us." He says, "I don't know the Lord. Who is the Lord?" And so they get this argument going back and forth. And Pharaoh looks at the taskmasters and says, "You know what? Obviously, the Jews don't have enough to do. So we're going to give them more." Verse 22. And Moses returned. This is chapter 5, verse 22. And Moses returned. Back up to verse 19. And the officers of the children of Israel did see they were in evil case. After it was said, "Ye shall not minish aught of your bricks of your daily task." Basically, what they did was they would mix the clay with straw. And Pharaoh's people said, "Sorry, you're not getting any more straw. You got to go get your own straw. And then you got to make the bricks." Well, they couldn't finish the job. You read down through chapter 5, you find out that they just couldn't get the job done. And the leaders could see that they were in trouble. Verse 20, "And they met Moses and Aaron, who stood in the way as they came forth from Pharaoh. And they said unto them, The Lord look upon you and judge, because ye have made our savor to be abhorred in the eyes of Pharaoh, and in the eyes of his servants, to put a sword in their hand to slay us." This isn't so easy. This isn't working out the way you said. Well, Moses didn't give him a plan because he didn't have one. Because God didn't give it to him yet. Well, he did give it to him. But he just didn't tell him. It just didn't get relayed in the translation. Verse 22. And Moses returned unto the Lord and said, "Lord, wherefore hast thou so evil entreated this people? Why is it that thou hast sent me? For since I came to Pharaoh to speak in thy name, he hath done evil to this people, neither hast thou delivered thy people at all. Lord, this isn't... I didn't think this was going to be the plan." Well, you know, when God starts you out on something, you get your ideas in your head about how God's going to make this thing work. And when you're serving God, He doesn't give you the whole plan. Pastor's heard this story probably hundreds of times. My father never would have taken a church in a chicken barn until after he had one in a bank. By the way, we didn't have access to the vault. We just got to use the downstairs and set it up and tear it down and set it up and tear it down. And we had 3 people coming to the church besides our family. And, when Temple Baptist needed a pastor, my dad said, "That's looking pretty good." But if God gave him that plan a year before, my dad would have said, "Maybe I should stay in Bible school for another year. You know, maybe I should try to really go to Hawaii." But anyways, they wind up with this problem on hand. More demands are made from them. And of course, in the next several chapters, we see the 10 plagues that are brought upon Egypt. And one after another, God batters Egypt. Just beats his stuffings out of them. Go to chapter 15. Until finally, Pharaoh says, "I want you out. Get out." And the people of Egypt said, "What do we have to give you to leave?" And they spoiled the Egyptians. They spoiled the Egyptians. I'm sorry, I told you chapter 15. Chapter 14 is where I want you to be. Chapter 14 and verse 13. After they left, God led them and God was leading them. It was very clear they were to follow the pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night. It took them 3 days' journey down by the Red Sea. I was going to say the Dead Sea, but it's the Red Sea. They rhyme. But it took them down by the Red Sea and got them encompassed in where they couldn't get out. There was mountains on the north. There was mountains on the south. And they're up against water. So imagine this being the Red Sea. And there's mountains here and there's mountains there. And they're right here. And then Pharaoh's army. Pharaoh changed his mind. Now you'd think if you just got the stuffings beat out of you, you'd stop getting up. Stay down. When I was a teenager, I was over in Janesville DeWitt High School. That's a rough high school. That was a rough high school 40 years ago. It's got to be even rougher now. I had a guy that was picking on me. Imagine that. Somebody picking on a little guy. And finally one day I'd had my fill and we were at the end of gym class. And we were at the end of the line. He was in front of me and he turned around and he, like this, he was a big fat guy. I know about being a big fat guy, just not a tall big fat guy. But at the time I was scrawny. I must have weighed almost 100 pounds. And he'd do that to me and I'd, you know, kind of go flying backwards. And I got mad. I'd had my fill. And I stood up and I said, why don't you lay off my case? Just about like that. And by the time I had the word case coming out of my mouth, his fist was coming in. And I mean, you ever see that thing where somebody punches somebody and they're off the ground before they hit the ground? That was me. Now, and then of all the stupid things to do, I stood up and said, what did you do that for? And by the time four was coming out of my mouth, his fist was coming in again. Fortunately, at that time, the coach was walking in. And he saw me at the end of this guy's fist and saw me go flying. And he walked up and he looked. And he says, are you all right? Mouth's bleeding, you know. Well, let's see, my head didn't fall off, so I guess I'm going to be okay. He says, well, go on in and get changed. And I heard as I was walking out, the coach walked up to this guy and said, if you ever lay a finger on him again, I will open... They had a garage door. They had a garage door. I mean, this thing was like 16 or 18 feet high at the end of the gym. He says, I'll use you to open up one right next to it. That guy never bothered me again. But I don't think it was what the coach said. But, you know, it's, I guess the point I was trying to get at, I don't want to take too much time with the story, but what I'm saying is, I was stupid for getting back up. If I had stayed down, maybe he wouldn't have hit me again. If I'd have known what I know now, I'd have made it hurt. I'd have stayed down and gone for the knees. Yeah, he probably would have fallen on me, and you would have heard about this little flat grease spot in Janesville DeWitt 40 years ago. But I'd have made sure that he'd never bother anyone else again. But I got back up. Pharaoh's just been beat 10 times, including losing his firstborn. Man, take some time to mourn. This guy comes after him. And they get on the seashore. And in verse 11 it says, and they said, that's the people of Israel, because there were no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness? Wherefore hast thou dealt thus with us to carry us forth out of Egypt? Is not this the word that we did tell thee in Egypt, saying, let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians? That's not what they said. They said, yeah, we're getting out of here. For it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness. And Moses said unto the people, fear ye not. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will show to you today. For the Egyptians who ye have seen today, ye shall see them again no more. And in the meantime, I think, while he's talking to them, I think in his mind he's praying, God, what do we do now? The Lord shall fight for you, and ye shall hold your peace. And in verse 15 it says, and the Lord said unto Moses, why criest thou unto me? So Moses was praying. And this would start his ministry of prayer, and we're going to see that ministry of prayer tonight. Moses spent a great deal of time praying for the Israelites. He prays. And the Lord gives them the way out. And it leads them right through the Red Sea. And after they get to the other side, Pharaoh's army tries to come in. And of course, Pharaoh's army is closed in with water. They can't get out. Now, they just saw this miracle. And they're on the seashore and they're dancing and singing. And it's wonderful and everything. And then in chapter 15, you see that. They get all done with this, and in verse 22 it says, "So Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea, and they went out into the wilderness of Shur, and they went 3 days into the wilderness and found no water." Now, 3 days without water is not good. I get headaches if I don't drink a lot of water. I have other problems as well if I don't drink a lot of water, and most of you have to drink quite a bit of water. So they're excited when they come to water. In verse 23 it says, "And when they came to Marah, they could not drink of the waters of Marah, for they were bitter." Now, you know, God's not up in heaven saying, "Oh man, look at that. They got stuck at the Red Sea. What am I going to do now? I got to come up with a miracle." He wasn't surprised when they went to the waters of Marah and they were bitter. He wasn't surprised. "And the people murmured against Moses, saying, 'What shall we drink?' And he cried unto the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree, which when he had cast into the waters were made sweet." Listen, I'm going to tell you something. I have never heard since of anything that will sweeten waters. They throw a tree into this water. What is it? It's a miracle. Again, it's one of God's directions that don't make any sense. But here it is. Here it is. And he says, "Throw this tree and cut the tree down, throw it into water, and the waters will be sweet." The waters were made sweet, which when he had cast into the waters were made sweet. There he made for them a statute and an ordinance, and there he proved them. Now, you know, Moses, what did he do? He went and he prayed for the people. He would pray some more times. Let's look at Numbers chapter 11. I'm sorry, Exodus 32. Almost skipped a really good point. Don't want to skip any points. Want to keep you here just as long as possible. That way you'll think twice about telling everybody they missed the best message. No, you'd have to tell them that. See, make sure you go. Anyways, Exodus chapter 32. Moses is up on the mount. And in verse 7 it says, "And the Lord said unto Moses, 'Go, get thee down, for thy people, which thou broughtest out of the land of Egypt, have corrupted themselves. They made the golden calf.'" That's up in the first part of the chapter. "They have turned aside quickly out of the way, which I commanded them. They have made them a molten calf and have worshipped it and have sacrificed thereunto. And it said, 'These be thy gods, O Israel, which have brought thee up out of the land of Egypt.'" By the way, let me take a side minute. If you, this is for free. I just want to tell you stuff I know. No, not really. If you read in Ezekiel, he talks about the wheel and he talks about the four faces. One time he talks about those four faces being a man, an eagle, a lion, and a calf. Okay? But another time he talks about the four faces and he says it's the same one that he saw the first time. A man, an eagle, a lion, and a seraphim. Or cherubim, I think. I think he says cherubim. I think he calls them cherubim. Who's the anointed cherub? Satan. Satan's got the face of a cow. Holy cow! What? I have to be careful because I like to say holy cow, and I get thinking about that, and I just putting this all together. I better stop saying holy cow. just need to start saying, wow. But what do? They make a calf. They make a calf to worship a calf. Who do you think might have inspired that? And think about this. God, when He made the cherubims, He made them with a cow's face and everything. They were beautiful and all that stuff. And then, when He remakes the earth, or He takes it away from Satan and gives it to man, the cow is one of the dumbest animals. Think about that. Is that not a slap in the face? Well, I mean, cows are some dumb, right? They do know how to eat, though. They make good milk. Make great hamburgers. So there are, anyways, let's not chase too many rabbits here. The Lord said unto Moses, get thee down. He goes down and he finds out that they have made this golden calf. And in verse 10, God says this, now therefore let me alone, let my wrath wax hot against them, that I may consume them, and I will make of thee a great nation. This is a valid offer. If Moses had said, God, I like that, go ahead, kill him, God would have killed him. But you know, God doesn't make that offer to just anybody. He makes it to Moses because He knows Moses won't accept the offer. He makes the offer to him so that Moses can give him the glory. Look what he says. And Moses besought the Lord, verse 11. And Moses besought the Lord his God and said, Lord, why doth thy wrath wax hot against thy people which thou hast brought forth out of the land of Egypt with great power and with a mighty hand? Wherefore should the Egyptians speak and say, for mischief did he bring them out to slay them in the mountains and to consume them from the face of the earth? Turn thy fierce wrath and repent this evil against thy people. And the Lord turned away from what he was going to do. What is Moses doing? He's interceding for people that just, listen, flat out from a human perspective, much less God's perspective, from a human perspective, they don't deserve to be prayed for. Moses sets a pretty high standard. Now think about this. What was he before he became their leader? He was a shepherd. He was a shepherd leading sheep. He knew how to care for sheep. And somewhere in this short period of time, God had given him a new heart to really be these people's shepherd. But he also was at one with God, so he told God, don't do it. Maybe God put him there because he was the only one who would say, God, don't kill him. He intercedes. Now kick over to Numbers chapter 11. We would go through Leviticus, but I don't want to say there's nothing good. There's nothing pertinent to this message. We'll put it that way. Leviticus, I'd have you all sleeping in about 3 minutes. Numbers chapter 11. The people are ready. It's time. They're leaving the mountain. They've just left the mountain. They've gone 3 days' journey. They are on their way to the promised land. Verse 1 says, and the people complained. And when the people complained, it displeased the Lord. And the Lord heard it, and his anger was kindled. And the fire of the Lord burnt among them and consumed them that were in the uttermost parts of the camp. Did they deserve it? Absolutely. And the people cried unto Moses. What did they do? They went to their pastor and said, would you pray for us? You know what? Why in the world didn't they go to God? They hadn't yet learned to go to God. They had not yet learned to... And in some ways, they couldn't go to God with certain things like we can. And the people cried unto Moses, and when Moses prayed unto the Lord, the fire was quenched. He prayed for him. And he called the name of the place Taberah because the fire of the Lord burned among them. And don't they... Now listen, folks. I just mentioned about Pharaoh. He gets whooped up on 10 times, and he still comes after the people of Israel. But then the people of Israel were just getting spanked. Look at verse 4. And the mixed multitude that fell among them, was among them, fell a lusting. And the children of Israel also wept again and said, "Who shall give us flesh to eat?" Now I think I've preached the message coming out of the wilderness here, and I've expressed this before. They were only a few days from crossing over Jordan. At this point, they're only a few days from crossing over Jordan. And had they crossed over Jordan, they would have been eating the fruit of the land of Jordan in just a few days. A few weeks, maybe a month or two at the most. It was not going to be long. But what did they do? They start complaining about a temporary situation. Listen, folks, you and I, this life is temporary. And the person who is a Christian who is going through the darkest days of life, if their whole life is hard, if they go through all of life and it's hard, but they're a Christian and they trust God, when they get to heaven, they're going to look back at this 60 or 70 or 80 years here and all the trouble that they had, and they're going to say, you know, it really wasn't all that bad. Think about it. If you could go through 5 minutes of absolute worst, the worst of everything for 5 minutes and have the rest of your earthly life be great, no losses, no problems, nothing to hurt your heart or your mind, nothing to tire you out, that'd be wonderful. Well, that's what heaven's for us. That's what heaven is for. That's for us after we've done our work down here. But I digress. These people weep. We remember the fish which we did eat in Egypt freely, the cucumbers, the melons, and the leeks, and the onions, and the garlic. But now our soul is dried away. There is nothing at all beside this manna before our eyes. Verse 10 says, then Moses heard the people weep throughout their families, every man in the door of his tent, and the anger of the Lord was kindled greatly. Moses also was displeased. Now, you know, Moses and the Lord, they had this mother-father type relationship. You know, your kids. How many of us guys have come home and our wives have said, your kids? Or how many of our wives have gone shopping and left us to babysit, and when they come home, we say, your kids? It's always your kids. Verse 11. And Moses said unto the Lord, wherefore hast thou afflicted thy servant? And wherefore have I not found favor in thy sight, that thou layest the burden of all this people upon me? By the way, he prays and he goes to the Lord. He goes to the Lord alone. He's not murmuring out in front of the people. He's getting alone with God and he's telling God what's on his heart. God gives him help. They get punished. Look at chapter 14 of Numbers. By the way, in chapter 14, this is where they reject God's plan for their life. Everyone 20 years old and older will die in the wilderness except for two men. That would be Joshua and Caleb. They rejected God's plan, and God proposes judgment. Verse 11. And the Lord said unto Moses, how long will this people provoke me, and how long will it be ere they believe me for all the signs which I have showed among them? I will smite them with pestilence and disinherit them, and will make of thee a greater nation and mightier than they. You ever think that maybe when God makes a second offer, maybe it's His will? I mean, think about it. Moses could say, I could retire, my kids could become the next nation, I'll be gone before they're big enough to be a problem. I mean, think about it. He's dealing with millions of people. Getting out of it might have been kind of fun. And then having a whole nation named after you. Hey, the nation of Moses. We could be reading about it. But what does he do? And Moses said unto the Lord, then the Egyptians shall hear it. By the way, you notice his prayer is not aimed so much at saving the Israelites as it is God's glorification. That's an interesting thought. That's the way we ought to pray, is for God's glory. And Moses said unto the Lord, then the Egyptians shall hear it, for thou broughtest up this people in thy might from among them. And they will tell it to the inhabitants of this land, for they have heard that thou, Lord, art among this people, and that thou, Lord, art seen face to face, and that thy cloud standeth over them, and that thou goest before them by daytime in a pillar of a cloud, and in a pillar of fire by night. Now, if thou shalt kill all this people as one man, Then the nations which have heard the fame of thee will speak, saying, because the Lord was not able to bring this people unto the, into the land which he sware unto them, therefore he hath slain them in the wilderness. And now I beseech thee, let the power of my Lord be great, according as thou hast spoken, saying, the Lord is long-suffering and of great mercy. You know what he's doing? He's saying, God, you're long-suffering. You're full of mercy. And as thou hast forgiven this people from Egypt, even until now. And the Lord said, I have pardoned according to thy word. But as truly as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Lord, because all those men which have seen my glory and my miracles, which I did in Egypt and in the wilderness, and have tempted me now these 10 times and have not hearkened to my voice, surely they shall not see the land which I swear unto their fathers, neither shall any of them that provoked me see it. But my servant Caleb, because he had another spirit with him and hath followed me fully, him will I bring into the land whereunto he went, and his seed shall possess it. By the way, in verse 32, he also names Joshua. God proposes judgment and Moses intercedes. But he's interceding for two things. Number one, he doesn't want to lose people of Israel, but he also doesn't. He wants to bring glorification to God, and losing the Israelite people is not going to bring glory to God. So now they wind up wandering in the wilderness. And you know, when things go awry in a church, and when people stand up and don't follow the Lord like they should, sometimes they get discontented. And then somebody will always pipe up their head and say, I don't know why the pastor thinks he should run the church. Probably because he's called. And listen, listen, folks, I'm going to tell you something. If you ever get the thought that this man thinks of himself so highly that he thinks he should be the pastor, he doesn't think that. He thinks he should be the pastor because God called him. And if he's anything like me, he probably wrestled with God quite a few times before he made that decision. I don't know if that's the case. We've never talked about it. I know I wrestled with God. And you know, I resisted God. And much like Moses, sometimes I probably even aggravated God. Lord knows I can aggravate Mary. I certainly got to be able to aggravate God. Chapter 16, verse 1. Now Korah, the son of Izhar, and the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, and Dathan, and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and An, the son of Peleth, sons of Reuben, took men. And they rose up before Moses with certain of the children of Israel, 250 princes of the assembly, famous in the congregation, men of renown. And they gathered themselves together against Moses and Aaron. Korah, Dathan, and Abiram almost lead Israel to destruction again. God proposes judgment in verse 20. And the Lord spake unto Moses and unto Aaron, saying, separate yourselves from among this congregation, that I may consume them in a moment. Now, not offered here, but implied is, you'll be left. I'll make a nation of you. But look at verse 22. And they, that's Moses and Aaron. Do you know that Moses, by being an interceder and by being a man of prayer, has now taught Aaron to also be an interceder and a man of prayer? And they fell upon their faces and said, O God, the God of spirits of all flesh, shall one man sin, and wilt thou be wroth with all the congregation? And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the congregation, saying, get you up from about the tabernacle of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. And Moses rose up and went unto Dathan and Abiram, and the elders of Israel followed him. And he spake unto the congregation, saying, depart, I pray you, from the tents of these wicked men, and touch nothing of theirs, lest you be consumed in their sins. By the way, if you read in the Psalms, there are certain Psalms that are for the sons of Korah. I think that the sons of Korah knew that daddy was wrong. And I think that they survived because they stepped away from dad's tent. That's a hard thing to do. And Moses said, hereby shall ye know that the Lord hath sent me to do all the works for I have not done them of mine own mind. Now, I want you to think about this. Something miraculous is about to happen, but Moses isn't going to make it happen. He's just speaking the words. Verse 29, if these men die the common death of all men, or if they be visited after the visitation of all men, then the Lord hath not sent me. That's a pretty big challenge. It's kind of like Elijah on the mountain praying down fire. I mean, that's a gutsy challenge. Verse 30, but if the Lord make a new thing and the earth open her mouth and swallow them up with all that appertain unto them, and they go down quick into the pit, then ye shall understand that these men have provoked the Lord. That's a pretty big challenge. The earth's going to open up and swallow them? Listen, I have prayed that this would happen in Albany at a particular state house. Is this going online? Okay, if it happens, I didn't have anything to do with it, but maybe the Lord did. Other than I prayed for it. And it came... Sorry, couldn't help it. And it came to pass, as he had made an end of speaking all these words, that the ground clave asunder that was under them, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed them up, and their houses and all the men that appertained unto Korah and all their goods. They and all that appertained unto them went down alive into the pit, and the earth closed upon them, and they perished from among the congregation. Now, you'd think that the people of Israel would say, yeah, I think Moses is God's man. But you know, just like Christians, the Israelites had a real bad case of industrial strength stupid. We call that ISS, industrial strength stupid. Look at verse 41. But on the morrow, all the congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron, saying, ye have killed the people of the Lord. They did not open up the ground. God did. But they're blaming the God's chosen men. And once again, Moses has to pray for them. Verse 45, get you up from among this congregation that I may consume them as in a moment. Man, they aren't even letting God's temperature ratchet down a little bit. The pot is on, the kettle is on the stove, the thing's whistling at full blast. They get it turned down just a notch and they turn around and turn the heat right back up. I hate listening to a kettle whistle. But man, I'm going to tell you something. That's a whole lot better than having God judging you. These people are dumb. And Moses said unto Aaron, take a censer and put fire therein from off the altar and put on incense and go quickly into the congregation and make an atonement for them. For there is wrath gone out from the Lord. The plague is begun. And Aaron goes out and does what he's told and stops the plague. And Israel didn't die. Moses, in all of his works, he you can see that he intercedes for these people. Go over to chapter 21. In chapter 21, they're journeying. And in verse 4, it says, and they journey from Mount Hor by the way of the Red Sea to compass the land of Edom. The soul of the people was much discouraged because of the way. You know, sometimes you get discouraged in the battle. And the people spake against God and against Moses, wherefore have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? Now, they are 40 years out. Probably 39 years and 6 months or so out. It's almost time for them to go into the land. And they're still being stupid. Verse 6, and the Lord sent fiery serpents among the people, and they bit the people, and much people of Israel died. Therefore, the people came to Moses and said, we have sinned. Again, we have sinned, for we have spoken against the Lord and against thee. Pray unto the Lord that he may take away the serpents from us. And Moses prayed for the people. But this time, relief didn't come. And the Lord said unto Moses, make thee a fiery serpent and set it upon a pole, and it shall come to pass that every one that is bitten, when he looketh upon it, shall live. Now, if you're a worker in brass, brass is like cast iron. Okay? It has to be cast. You know what that means? That means you got to make forms and everything for it to be cast. This is not a quick process. So all the time this is going on, guess what? You get bit, you are dead. They finally get it up, and the people are rescued. Now, back up to chapter 20, and we are almost done, to your relief. Moses has ministered now for almost 40 years, probably a little more than 40 years now, based upon whatever time he was in Egypt before they came out. Verse 1 says, "Then came the children of Israel, even the whole congregation, into the desert of Zin in the first month, and the people abode in Kadesh. And Miriam died there and was buried there. And there was no water for the congregation, and they gathered themselves together against Moses and against Aaron." Now they had been to this place before, and they had smitten a rock. He was supposed to smite the rock the first time, and water came out. They're back at this spot. "And the people chode with Moses, and spake, saying, Would God that we had died when our brethren died before the Lord." That's a stupid thing to say. You know? I mean, sometimes if you get disappointed enough, you can go to and say, "Lord, you know, if it's my time, please just take me." But don't challenge God openly and stand in front of everybody and say, "I wish God had just killed me." He might. You know, it might be standing there whining and a bus will come through and get you. "And why have you brought up the congregation of the Lord into this wilderness that we and our cattle should die here? And wherefore have you made us to come up out of Egypt to bring us unto this evil place?" Well, they haven't arrived yet where they're supposed to be. "It is no place of seed or of figs or of vines or of pomegranates, neither is there any water to drink." And Moses and Aaron went from the presence of the assembly unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, and they fell upon their faces. What did they do? They did the same thing they did every other time. They went to prayer. They went to prayer. They did the right thing. They went to prayer. "And the glory of the Lord appeared unto them. And the Lord said unto Moses, saying," the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, "Take the rod and gather thou the assembly together, thou and Aaron thy brother, and speak ye unto the rock before their eyes. And it shall give forth his water, and thou shalt bring forth to them water out of the rock. So shalt thou give the congregation and their beasts drink." And Moses took the rod from before the Lord, as he commanded him. And Moses and Aaron gathered the congregation together before the rock. And he spoke in a way that he had never spoken to them before. And he said unto them, Hear now, ye rebels, must we fetch you water out of this rock?" When they're on the way to the rock, I think he and Aaron got talking and said, "We ought to be a little more demonstrative with these people. Maybe they'll respect us better." And Moses lifted up his hand, and with his hand he smote the rock twice. He didn't speak to the rock like he was told. He smote the rock. "And the water came out abundantly, and the congregation drank, and their beasts also." So they got the result they wanted, right? Look at verse 12. "And the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron." This is why I think the two of them got talking about it. "Because you believe me not to sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore ye shall not bring this congregation into the land which I have given them." Do you remember the verse that we read at the beginning? "To whom much is given, much is required." Okay. We expect from our pastor perfection. We expect from his family perfection. Why? Because they're the preacher. They're the pastor and his wife and kids. We expect that. And we get all haughty and everything when the pastor does wrong. You know, pastors make mistakes because they wear the same robe of flesh you do. Except that now they're out in front of everybody. So everything they do is known. And every misstep is talked about. Moses loses his cool and is immediately judged. Now we accept the promise that when the pastor blows it, he deserves punishment. But let me ask you a question. And this goes to our missions conference. And it goes to our missions on a daily basis. Okay? We talked this morning about winning souls. People that don't know the Lord. Naomi invested a great deal of time in those girls. And those girls, they loved her. And one of them went back with her. And wound up providing her with a namesake for her husband and her son. Barnabas went and got a preacher that nobody liked because he was a bit of a toad. And he knocked the rough edges off and turned him into a man who loved teaching other preachers how to love people. You look at Paul's old his letters. I'm telling you, he loved his preacher boys. He loved the people that he worked with in the churches. Not necessarily pastors, not necessarily anything. They ministered in the different churches. And he would mention them in his letters. No position listed, just mentioned them. Why? Because they were near to him. They were dear to him. Something changed in Paul because Barnabas invested some time in another Christian. But here's where the investment really gets deep. And it's of utmost importance for you and me. I say all the time that we need to pray for everybody. Turn over to Ephesians chapter 6. Ephesians chapter 6, Paul has just given the armament of the Christian. And we won't belabor those things, but going down to verse 18, he says, praying always with all prayer and supplication in the Spirit, and watching thereunto. Now he's preaching to the Ephesians. He's not preaching to the pastors. He's preaching to all of them. That's the congregation. Praying always with all prayer and supplication in the Spirit. And watching thereunto with all perseverance and supplication for all saints. Now, would you not agree with me that of the apostles, Paul was probably the most exciting and the greatest of them? Some people think he's the greatest. Everybody has their preference. But he was a great man. Greatly used of God. Because Barnabas invested in him. But look what he says here. He continues on the theme of prayer in verse 19. He says, and for me. Pray for me, that utterance may be given unto me, that I may open my mouth boldly. The Apostle Paul. The guy they called Mercurius because he was the chief speaker. He was always running his mouth. But he was asking for boldness. Asking that they would pray for him that I might open my mouth boldly to make known the mystery of the gospel. And listen, he doesn't say it once, he says it twice. For which I am an ambassador in bonds, that therein I may speak boldly as I ought to speak. Let me suggest to you that one of the big keys to not only our missions program and our personal missions to the people that we know, to the unsaved that we know, and to our church family, one of our chief missions projects is praying for the pastor and his wife and his family. Go back and look, and I challenge you to go back and read the five books of the Pentateuch, four books. You can go Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. You will find Moses almost a dozen times interceding for the people of Israel when he really should have just said, "Oh, hang it, God, kill him." And at least three times that it was implied that he would be the only one left or one of few left. But here's the question. Moses messed up three times. He killed the Egyptian. He wound up going out to the wilderness for 40 years. Okay? Because that wasn't how God wanted him to be used. When he came down off the mount, he got angry because they had made the golden calf. And Moses is the only guy in the world that broke all 10 commandments at once. Now, you all are laughing at that. That's a Bruce Craig joke. I have to tell him I actually got a laugh out of one of his jokes. And then the third time is when he smote this rock. 40 years of exemplary ministry. And listen, I'm going to challenge you. Go back and read those four books. You will not find once that anyone prayed for Moses. What if the people of Israel had said, Moses has been our leader? What if they suddenly got the realization that they have really done wrong by him and went to prayer and said, God, please let Moses come? Maybe God would have said no. But what if they'd have got down on their knees when he blew it? What if they'd have got down on their knees and said, God, he's our man. You've given him to us for 40 years. Let him come to the other side. But nobody prayed for Moses. We have to have a ministry of prayer. And of all the people, the preachers. And listen, our preacher, yes, and other preachers. We got Brother Hagin over in the other Port Byron. We got a whole list of preachers on our prayer list. Pray for those guys. Why? Because they are under attack. Their families are under attack. Why? Because if you can knock down the family, you can knock down the preacher. If you can knock down the preacher, you destroy the church. The only thing that saved the people of Israel was God came down and put His glory on Joshua and made it very clear that Joshua was the next leader. Who prayed for Moses? Who's praying for ours? Father, thank you for your love. Thank you for our pastor. Thank you for your gospel and our home in heaven. Lord, help us always to remember that we need to pray